Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Thank you so much, everyone, for coming to this session on brand-funded podcasting. Also, thank you to everyone for being 30 minutes early for Take That. It's a pleasure to be the warm-up act for them. By way of introduction, I'm Millie Weber, an agent at WME. I work with podcasters, production companies, influencers, celebrities, and specialise in commercialising IP. And we're joined here with Eddie Scott from Acast. He's creative director of Acast UK. He leads on partnerships across some of the biggest shows in the UK, ensuring that all parties involved are very happy with the creative output. And we're also joined by Matt Campion, co-founder and creative director of Spirit Studios, best known for their work with the Stand Up Sketch Show, In Sickness and In Health podcast, and I Am Whole. Thank you guys for coming. So I guess it would be useful to start off by understanding the audience. If by a show of hands, who has spent money on branded podcasting or considered it within any media plans? Okay, a good amount. That's good for us to know. It would be great, Eddie, if you could kick us off talking about the different types of branded podcasting in the space today.
Yeah, absolutely. So the space has evolved really dramatically over the last few years. So about 4 or 5 years ago, when you were talking about branded content in the podcasting space, what you were mostly dealing with was exclusively audio segments, exclusively audio episodes that would be delivered to podcast listeners in their podcast feeds. Nowadays, as what a podcast is has evolved so much, that's not the case anymore. What we're experiencing now is full 360 campaigns that touch on everywhere we consume podcasts. So social, live events, streams, YouTube, the whole package, right? And so that's been a really, really big development. What we do and what we experience in branded content is mostly defined in two strands. The first being original podcasts. So when brands want to make their own podcast, Waitrose's Dish being a great example, that was a very, very popular mode of branded content. The dial kind of flipped more towards brand partnerships with existing creators as brands started to really understand the benefit of partnering with a creator who already has that built-in audience. But we're seeing a shift back because the opportunity to create editorial from scratch and become an entertainment brand is huge. But yeah.
Amazing. And Matt, what's your experience with branded podcasting?
Well, I think, it's one of those things that across the board, we make everything from our own IP where we own operate our own pods. But we also do work with brands, but we work with them in multiple ways. So it's a case of either we might partner with a brand through something we do with Acast or another publisher, where they'll either be a sponsor of an episode or a part of what we're doing, or we actually go direct as well. There are lots of ways that brands can get involved in the space. And I think one of the biggest things for me that is a reason for brands to be involved is the dwell time. There's not many other mediums that we work in. And at Spirit, we work across, we make television shows, we make branded content, we make podcasts. And podcasting seems to be the space where the dwell time, which is almost 30 minutes, for an audience, if you get your content right, is a really great spend for brands.
And I think something we were talking about earlier is the brand affinity in branded content and how that has changed. And, you know, people's attention on different mediums can really change. And you might be able to capture an audience's attention on a TikTok or through some paid media. But that dwell time, as you were saying, is actually very short. And the nature of it is that people keep scrolling. Whereas it would be great, Eddie, if you could talk about experience with Acast, about how that long form content and the different touch points with brands.
Yeah, absolutely. So like Matt said, the average dwell time we're seeing on branded content is half an hour, which, like, as you're alluding to, Millie, like in the era of Instagram, TikTok, like all these mediums where people are just scrolling through and all brands are just trying to make something thumb stopping. But even if something does stop someone's thumb, the dwell time is going to be, you know, we all know that they're not going to be the healthiest, right? What we've been able to do, and what, like, through collaborations with Spirit and other partners, is create branded content that has dwell times that last up to full 30 minutes, right? So, like, I think basically what I'm trying to say is the spaces, the opportunities for long form storytelling, to tell a story at length about your brand, about what you represent, what your mission is, those opportunities are really dwindling in the space. But we still offer it in podcasting. And not only do we offer it, but we offer it through one of the most immersive mediums and through creators that, I mean, like, people in here will know who listen to podcasts. If you have, if you're an avid fan of any podcast, you will listen to that for hours each year, years on end, right? It's a type of parasocial relationship that is kind of new. Like, it's kind of not something that's been matched elsewhere. So being able to leverage those voices who have such a close parasocial relationship with their listeners at that dwell time, it's a crazy opportunity.
And I think even within the past 2 years, everything was based on a CPM, how many times you can mention the brand within the shortest amount of time. And now having that 30 minute plus window, it's not about how many times can you mention X brand. It's the affinity and the qualitative relationship that that audience then has with the brand through that longer form content. And it's not just long form audio. Recently, there've been partnerships that long form audio, for example, just did a ski trip with Crystal Ski, and long form audio content on YouTube, cut down on socials across a CPM basis, like so many different touch points where you can talk about the narrative of that brand in multiple different ways, which is brilliant. That's an example of it being done very well. What about branded content gone wrong? What do you think about that?
Yeah, so I think, like, through my experience, I think you can tell when you might be in for a tricky ride at the beginning, when a partner is most concerned, exactly what you just sort of alluded to taking a quantitative approach to brand mentions rather than a qualitative approach. So what I mean by that, quite simply, is if you're judging your branded content by the number of mentions your brand's going to get, you're just looking at it wrong. What we really focus on is the quality of those mentions and the quality of how your brand is positioned in the content. Like I said, we're speaking through creators that have these really, really close relationships with their audiences. As people in this room will know, you can recognize when your favorite creator isn't being entirely genuine. So the other side of that is authenticity. Like, if you ever start to feel that your favorite podcaster isn't being authentic, you will lose attention and you will lose affinity for the piece of content you're listening in. So the two sort of telltale signs for branded content maybe having gone a bit skew-whiff would be that it doesn't feel entirely authentic, and that it feels like mentions are being prioritized over a really effective story being told.
And I think the relationship with the audience is so important, and that is between the podcaster and the audience, and having a brand just come in and try and get their name in as many times as possible in a really inauthentic way just damages that relationship. Go on, Matt, what were you going to say?
Well, we talked about this earlier. I'm really sorry. Is everybody else, like, so distracted by that? It's like, I feel like I'm in some sort of old parallel universe where I'm tripping or something. Anyway, I'll try and actually have a conversation in my own head, and then if you hear it, it might work. I tend to think that branded content, because we make it both in audio and in video, and we also do stuff that works in television as well with AFPs and stuff. But those that know it really well, and listen, actually, do you know what? It doesn't matter whether you know it well. You, as an audience, everyone knows how we feel as a viewer or a listener, right? You know that if you hear something and it's not right, it's been eggy sold to you, it's eggy, it's not right. And I think when it comes to branded content, whether it's video, audio, television, whatever, you've got to make sure that it works for you. And I think, by doing, it's like being in a relationship where you're in a relationship where you're the one that's not bothered and they're coming at you all the time and they really want to be in the relationship. And what does it do? It puts you off, doesn't it? It makes you go, oh God, do you know what? And then in the end, in our teenage years, we dumped them. But or I got dumped, more to be the point. Probably maybe I'm not over it. But I do think that branded content works in that way. It's the psychology of humans. As humans, we want to be a part of authentic, real conversations that mean something to us. And if a brand can support that, facilitate that, and be in it in a cool way, then it works. If they don't and they want to be up front and in your face, it's off-putting. I think it's that simple.
Yeah. I think a really important thing to try and do when you're ever working with branded content, but especially in the podcasting space, because audiences know these creators so well, is try and just put your media brain to a side and think with an audience brain whilst consuming it. Because exactly like you said, Matt, if audiences get a whiff that something is a podcaster possibly taking an opportunity to cash a check, it's just not going to hit the same. So if you can think of it as very first and foremost, is it going to be additive for audiences? Is it going to be engaging for audiences? And if the answer is yes, so much of the mission's complete. The rest becomes so easy after that. But that really is the mission. It has to be additive for audiences.
And in our preparation for this panel as well, we spoke a lot about best practices. And obviously we've got these two from different touch points in the journey of a brand will come to Eddie with an idea. You will work with them on that idea and then come to the likes of Spirit Studios where you will then implement that with the right podcast. So it'd be great to chat more about sort of best practices around where the creative control needs to sit.
Yeah.
But from that sort of start to finish process.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think it is essentially creative control is entirely paramount. Matt, you'll know this better than me probably, but what is most important is that a podcaster feels ownership over the content they're delivering, because they will know that it's going to be content that their audience enjoys. So I think best practice, it's important to get a treatment exactly right. It's important for a brand to know where their mentions are going to come, exactly what their positioning is going to be. But I think first and foremost, it's briefing the talent so they absolutely understand that the goal here is to make content that's really engaging for audiences. And then it's our job to think of smart ways to communicate the brand message and to make sure that we're telling the brand story.
I agree. I mean, I think at Spirit, we make a lot of pods that are sort of entertainment and comedy based. And I think it's quite easy if you're in that space to think of a funny way of delivering a brand message, which does help a little bit if you compared to if you're doing something that's more serious. But a good example that I can think of, which it maybe isn't podcasting, although it does have its own pod, is Chris Evans with Virgin Radio. I don't know if anyone ever listens to it. I used to listen to it until I realized that I didn't want to run a marathon, and then that's why I stopped. But Chris Evans' breakfast show is a really good example of how branded content can work, because it's a show that allows the audience to have 3 hours of uninterrupted entertainment if you're into it. Because it's sponsored by a brand. So the first brand they had when they launched was Sky. But they were able to really sort of authentically talk about Sky in a way that was, what have you been watching on the weekend? What have you been catching up on Now TV? Succession became a big part of the conversation. Films, all that kind of stuff, which is something that we all do, which is all natural to us. It's relatable. And then the Sky contract ran out and they moved over to Cinch, which owns WeBuyAnyCar.com, and they were able to comedically work out, they started calling it the Cinch Evans Show, and he runs a big charity festival, and which is through cars, and that obviously was something that they could then talk about, because they talk about it on the radio naturally. They talk about Car Fest all year round, about all the bands they've got on it, about the cars they've got on it. So then naturally they're able to then start talking about Carfest, about Cinch and the platform, because it was part of the subject they were talking about. Now, that probably is on the nose using a bit of fun and trying to be direct with the brand. But from a brand's perspective, that is great value, because you're still listening to the show. You're not having to cut off to lots of local adverts and all the stuff that we have to do through other radio stations. You're still getting everything you want from the content, but it's being integrated into a subject that you're happy to listen to, because that's what they talk about naturally. And I think when it comes to any of the pods that we create or we want to partner with brands, that's what we're looking to do, is to create those natural conversations that a brand can be a part of, and then benefit off the back end, because as a listener, you think, well, do you know what? Dish is a really good example. Dish is an example where, a lot of people are into food content. Food content is sort of dying off on television now. That chop and chat stuff is gone. So where do we find it? We find it through clips on the internet. We find it through audio. Dish is a way of taking good name talent, respected chef, big name audio star and creating a thing that is all about food and the love of it with celebrities. So it's very relatable to us that we can all go, oh yeah, I love doing that. I love doing that. But then at the same time, it's sponsored by Waitrose. So whenever you think about the next time you want to do a dinner party or you want to go and do something on a Saturday night, you might think about Waitrose in that scheme of things.
That is a brilliant example of a brand funded podcast done very well and is liked by many. It's brilliant. Eddie, I'd love it if you could talk to us about the BrewDog partnership, because that was a huge success.
Yeah, I think like bouncing off what you said, Matt, I think like, so just to zoom out a bit, before we get into that partnership, I think like a trend we're seeing is brands understanding that there's a huge opportunity in podcasting, of course, but beyond that, in really getting to know the podcast you're going to partner with, finding out what the inside jokes are that podcast makes, finding out what the content they produce is, finding out what the pre-existing narratives are, the things they're already talking about that you could bring your brand into, and your brand could be a solution to whatever it is they're talking about. So this is essentially an example of that, right? So on the Peter Crouch podcast, Peter long had a dream of making a beer that was half lager, half stout. That's vile. But this was like what he wanted to do, right? And BrewDog found this out. They understood this and they jumped in the podcast and they said they were going to make the Laut with Crouch, right? And so then over the course of a few months, they had segments each week where they would do the design of the can, they would do taste tests, they did everything you would do in the process of launching a beer, and then even like up to doing a limited edition in supermarkets and a launch party. So that's an example of a brand understanding a joke in a podcast, understanding a pre-existing narrative in a podcast, and finding like a way to be a part of that in a way that's additive for audiences. And then that's led on to a longer partnership which between BrewDog and Peter Crouch, where Peter Crouch would record in BrewDog's podcast studio with Laut on tap, which has been like a really symbiotic relationship for audiences and for BrewDog.
That's an amazing example of the talent getting exactly what they want out of it and the brand being incredibly happy. Like, that's such amazing synergy.
Well, I also think that's a good example of pods should, if there's brands that you want to work with, pods should voice it and come up with, because it's a good way of creating a partnership through the fact that actually the reason why that partnership works is because they wanted it in the first place. Mm. Yeah. And then there was a beer brand that was willing to come on board and go, we'll fulfill that, lads. This is funny. And then the audience are going to go with it. Crouchfest. Has anyone heard of Crouchfest? It's insane. It's like they take over the whole of Wembley arena, you know.
Yeah, it's huge. I can also see a couple of questions coming through on Slido. So if anyone does have any more specific questions, please keep submitting them. And while we wait for those, it would be great if we could talk about, I know we've got a lot of brand managers, media buyers in the room. I guess Eddie first and then Matt, it would be great to know about the briefing process and any tips you have. Does a brand need to come with the concept in mind, the podcast they want to sponsor? What sort of level of planning do you guys need in order to move forward with your shows?
Yeah, absolutely. So at Acast, we can work direct with clients or we can work based off of briefs. That is how we respond and how we create our campaigns week by week. We have like a fully inbuilt creative team whose job it is to basically answer your brief in a way that aligns with the podcast's usual content or create wholly new content for your brand. So that's sort of what the process looks like from an Acast perspective. So in terms of process, we'll work alongside the brand to make sure that we're staying true to what the brief was, but still, in that case, making something that the audiences are guaranteed to enjoy.
I think from our perspective, I mean, we work both where we work direct with brands that come to us, but we also work with distributors and publishers like Acast and Spotify. I think for us, the most important thing for us is to know what it is the brand wants to get across to the audience and how they align with their demographic. Because at the end of the day, you know, if you work on the brand side of things, whether you are in marketing or whether you are actually on the brand side of things, brand protection, you've got to make sure that the ethos and the values of the brand align with the audience you're trying to connect with. So if you're connecting with a pre-existing audience. Then we've got to find how we authentically fit. If you're trying to launch something new, then we've got to design something that's specific to that. So in terms of the briefing process, I think the values are the key thing, because if you can talk to the values of a brand, then that's a way that you can connect to an audience in a way that doesn't have to be brand at the front of it and being in your face. It's a way, if your values are, say, like, I don't know, innovation, trust, whatever, you know, then the pod can develop its ideas and its format around those themes and those values. And then that way you feel like you're authentically talking the same language as the demographic you're trying to reach.
And we've worked on a few campaigns over the years where it is multi-podcast, but the same brief from a brand. And there's a, you know, you may listen to three podcasts, one on your commute, one while you're getting ready in the morning. You know, you have those shows that you listen to at very specific times. From your perspective, Eddie, how do you flex a brand's messaging so it's specific to each show and isn't just the same messaging that you're listening to across true crime or entertainment? How do you ensure that messaging feels fresh?
Yeah, absolutely. So if we were collaborating with multiple podcasters, we would make sure that we tailor the podcasters that are on the media plan to be able to match the brief. So what we'll do is we'll work with our podcasters to essentially find out how that brief fits them best. And then we'll tweak the messaging, making sure that there are fundamentals that we know have to be communicated. But around that, having as much fun with it as we can and basically thinking with that audience perspective around what's going to make for the most engaging content, and trying to form a narrative around that. Like a great example is we worked on a Greggs campaign, right? And we worked with multiple podcasters on Greggs. And in doing that, we found out from William Hansen of Help that he'd never been to a Greggs, which wasn't entirely surprising. And off the back of that, we decided that for his arm of the campaign, we could get him down to Greggs to work a shift in a store as his debut to Greggs. So it's like it's a trial and test process, right? We find things along the way out about podcasters that we can activate as part of the campaign, because, like I said, like, there's just the main thing is authenticity. And if we can get a brand to authentically relate to a podcaster to authentically relate to a product, that's what we want to put on the airwaves. That's what we want to communicate, because that's what will make the best content.
Amazing. And there's a couple of questions here about lack of reporting and insights in podcasting, and how that's often a barrier to entry is how can you prove the ROI? And that perhaps that was true 4 years ago, but it'd be great if we could talk more about perhaps the iOS updates and what that means and how the insights are growing and it's much more transparent these days.
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenge. I mean, at Acast, we work with brand study partners, the likes of Differentology, so we can always measure brand uplift, we can measure engagement. We're also expanding our campaigns to different platforms that aren't quite the same cookie-less environment that podcasting is, which allows us to get greater measurement. But the main string in our bow there, which proved effective so far, is making sure that we always have a brand study on these partnerships of this scale, to make sure we can give you the answer to the effectiveness of the campaign.
Matt, what's your experience with that, with brand direct partnerships and insights?
Well, I think the audio insights do give you a lot of things like dwell time, spikes, time of day, all that kind of stuff. But the way that we run things at Spirit, I think it's because we're a multi-platform business. And actually, you alluded to it earlier on about more 360, projects happening. We tend to build most of our pods on a video base as well. So Spirit's been around for 14 years now, and we've produced a lot of social content, built platforms, done all sorts of things in the digital space. So once we make a pod, I don't really think. The audio, I said it to when you're on, like, if you get the dwell time of like 28, 30, 40 minutes, that's a brilliant result for a brand. But also, you got to look to the social content, the trailers, the long form. You know, we've got a multi-camera studio now. We produce the long form YouTube version of it. which people watch on television. You know, we get a lot of results back saying how much people watch on their screens. You know, I think those viewing habits have changed a lot. But also we get the insights from social media, which are a very sophisticated. So I don't think it necessarily has to be a one-stop shop of going, if you're going to create a pod, you know, what's my ROI and my KPIs in podcasting? I don't think that's the case anymore. I think what you're doing, if you're creating a chat show brand in the digital space, which has opportunity to really build in a very big way now, especially with, you know, we also, like I mentioned earlier on, we work in the television industry. That's changing rapidly. It's the beginning of, or maybe the evolution of self-starting producers starting to create shows that people really love. And from that, you're reaching audiences in the places where you want them to be and where they want to engage with it. And I think we can all put our hands up and say that we see so many clips in our social media feeds of pods and conversations that happen where you don't necessarily have to listen to the pod, but you know what it's about. And if the brand's associated, it's another tick.
I think in our prep for this panel as well, one of the most interesting things that came out for me, I can't remember which one of you said it, so claim the credit, but was that when you're working in the branded podcasting space, you don't want it to be the brand talking. That's not what this medium is for. You want to be working with people that want to talk about your brand and that it authentically fits with them. And for me, that's really stuck with me ever since. I don't know which one of you said it. Claim it. Someone's asked here, what's better for branded podcasts, short-term series or ongoing shows?
I think ongoing show. If you have the capacity to make an always-on show, then absolutely. Like, podcasting is, it's you know, like, there's no algorithm that can deliver people podcasting content on audio platforms quite the same way there is on social. And so there's a challenge in building an audience. Like, it is Dish, for example. I remember when Dish started, Dish did distribute through Acast. It's a long-term program. Like, these things can't be done overnight. So I would say that if you're going to launch short-form series, there are absolutely ways to do that. I would argue that a paid media strategy has launched and will continue to launch a number of short-form series. But if you can do an ongoing series, I would absolutely aim for that, because I think in podcasting, long-term strategies really thrive for brands.
And are there any gaps in the brand space where you see from the podcasting side, maybe both of you, of there are specific areas or genres that aren't being fulfilled in the branded space? Are there any specific types of brands you would love to be seeing spending more in the podcasting space? We see a lot of experiential things or food and drink. Are there any sort of gaps that you'd love over the next 12 months to be growing?
I mean, if anyone wants to sponsor my Aston Villa podcast, I know it's quite niche, but I'd be into that.
That's a really interesting example, right? Because in America, something you're seeing a lot is NBA players and NBA teams, NFL teams starting their own podcasts with their players helming them. I think that's a really interesting opportunity to build a brand for a football club and tell stories about what their club represents. That's an idea.
Actually, TalkSport do quite a good thing, which is they call it fan-powered, I think, or powered, I don't know if anyone's seen it, powered by fans or fan-powered, which is they do support podcasts of all the Premiership teams, but because they got that network of the whole of TalkSport, that's a really clever move. I think if you're a brand and you can diversify in that way and you can find a niche that's kind of like, that you could own the whole thing, that's really clever. But I think going back to the question about short form versus long form, I think in digital, always on is always key. Because you're going to build audience, it takes time, it's iterative. You've got to produce stuff, put it out, learn from it, see what happened, what worked, what didn't work, then correct it and try and build on that as you go. And then you've got to layer in your marketing, your social media, and all the things that help build that audience and start getting you the spikes that you really need. So it does take time. A 6-episode series won't get you anywhere. But if you're a brand and you want to dip your toe in the water, then what you can do is you can go to an existing pod or an existing genre, and you could go, how does 6 episodes of us integrated into what you do look like? And then I suppose you can get your branding message across that way. So it's horses for courses.
Great. Well, before Take That literally come and drag us off the stage, thank you everyone for coming. Please do reach out if you'd like to continue the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @advertisingweek and visit our website europe.advertisingweek.com for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcander, the audio conference solution.